Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Jeez, yeah, gosh, yesterday
we went out on a weeknight.
We have a friend whose birthday is October 25th. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was it for my party season for all Halloween. I can't do it. I'm tired. It wasn't even a Halloween party. It was just someone's birthday.
I agree. I was like, did I just drink the wrong things? And I haven't been out in so long with like people that I just kept like slugging down drinks. I was like,
yeah.
I think I drank my first two drinks within like 30 minutes. I was like, and I'll need another. I woke up this morning quite fuzzy. And you know, for me, the hangovers are more like my sinuses, right? Just get like obliterated.
I get everything.
I made Brian and I get up and do like a 45 minute full body weighted workout on Peloton, and at one point tears started to roll down my cheeks because I was like, my body doesn't like this anymore. But I did it, and now I feel great,
Brooke.
we're gonna go run the dogs up the hill after this in an attempt to get the demons out of
You gotta get that blood pumping, baby.
I know. The more you hold still, like, all that stuff, you'd feel terrible. Well, that's some great advice, and welcome to Sidework Podcast, everybody.
Sidework Podcast, we're full of advice. We're here for you guys. This is part two. Of our Halloween spooky season episodes.
Oh gosh. Yes, it is. We've got more. This episode is a little more tilted toward bars where bartenders were kind of murdery, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, infamous bars where murderers hung out. Mm-hmm, so
But yeah, you know, before we get into that, you guys, next week's our 200th episode. Holy shit.
I know.
That's monumental. I feel really good about it.
200 of something.
200 of a thing that we did.
It's pretty great. You know, they say a certain amount of hours. I mean, we have put in over an hour easily into mm-hmm, many, many of these episodes. Mm-hmm. So when you think about it, you're mm-hmm, like, wow.
I think it's on par with how many collective hangovers we've had together, if you think about it.
Absolutely. Also true. Yeah. 200, and it's
200.
It'll be my birthday.
Yay!
And I'm turning officially middle-aged. Ooh. Yay. Spooky and scary.
It's fine. That is spooky for sure, but I'm excited for it. I'm excited to celebrate you. All the celebrations. I was looking at birthdays because for some reason I still have like birthdays like logged in, like plugged into my calendar on my phone. I need
to turn
something off. It's fine, but it's people that I haven't talked to in like 10 fucking years. Like, you know, it's like that kind of thing. I think it's like linked. I don't know what it's linked through, but I'm just like, there's so many birthdays in October. Would those be New Year's babies?
No. We are the products of our we are the children of parents who only fucked on Valentine's Day. My brother and I are both November babies, so it's a Valentine's Day it's the precursor. It's the required fucking that has to happen on Valentine's Day.
I get jumbled with gestational periods sometimes, so thank you for clarifying. Oh my god, that's so great. Well, let's just jump into these spooky headlines. You know,
yes,
we've got some nice themed headlines for you.
Yes.
This first one's great. You should kick it off for sure.
Yeah, no problem. So this was an Eater article that I found to be quite fascinating. It's written first person. The actual server is the author of this story. If you guys want to check it out, it's called Confessions of a Tableside Flambeur. I'm not sure. Anyways, talking about the maximalist style right now of some restaurants where people kind of want to go back out and they don't want the bare minimum. They want to be, you know, like the Korean place that you went to
people
where the guy was
wowed.
Like,
mm-hmm.
They want to be wowed. They mm-hmm. want you to literally pull out the big guns. And so if you're not familiar with what a flambé is, that is taking a dessert like Bananas Foster, specifically Bananas Foster, right?
Bananas Foster is this article, but there's also Cherry's Jubilee and then
yes.
Baked Alaska is another yes. one that's not mentioned in this article. Yeah.
But essentially you're wheeling that dessert cart over, which, oh my God, throwback. Have you had a dessert cart come by a table in a decade or two?
No. I don't know if I've ever had a fucking dessert. Other than they're just like, they bring the tray, but like no one's bringing like a preparation station to your table, you know?
No. So you roll out your dessert cart and with tableside, you have to essentially start a potentially uncontrolled fire to get the liquor and the flame to get this perfect flambé, which then is a very spectacular, spectator worthy, like whoosh, like a big, and then it caramelizes everything without using essentially like a butane gun. So you're
yes.
doing it just with your caveman open flame and everyone goes, ah, fire. And
yes, for sure.
Very, very happy.
I mean, for me, like the best was like a saganaki moment, like at a Greek restaurant.
Yes.
A flambé cheese. Opa.
So what's great is this server, who is the author of this article, goes on to say, nobody really gets any training. Nobody.
You're literally thrown into the fire.
And it goes wrong a lot. Or it sounds like the worst part, too, like as a server, I have more of that failure to launch fear more so than setting. I think it'd be also terrible to set someone on fire. Don't get me wrong. But all of like, it feels like this person's specific weight mare would be not able to get the dessert set on fire.
Yeah, for sure.
Like a
total fail and then have to start again.
Over and over again. Maybe wheel it away, come back, get someone to help you. And then it just turns into this embarrassing jumble, you know?
I think it's great. I mean, the restaurant that that they work at is in New York City. And they have spent a lot of money revitalizing like these two restaurants that are like basically, you know, they spent $30 million to restore this iconic space. And then the roving carts they use for tableside service were custom built for $20,000 each.
Wow.
This is basically one of my favorite, I think the funniest line in the article. It says, in other words, every time someone orders a Bananas Foster at the grill, a tuxedoed captain rolls up to their table pushing a trolley that costs as much as a Hyundai Elantra.
I was going to say, like, you're in charge of essentially a brand new car.
I think it's great, but they're doing, you know, Crab Louie and Dover Soles and like doing like wild mushroom omelets. I mean, this is a very French thing too, to have tableside preparation, mm-hmm. right? I think that's where it all kind of stems from. And people want to show. And this is the thing though. It's like you were saying, like, you know, when I went to the great like Korean restaurant, like the server like stopped and was like, you have your phone out. Are you ready? Because
right.
that's what everybody wants is like, they want the fucking, they're like, now I have the video. Now I have the power and I can post it on social media.
Right.
And that's really what it's about, you know?
To be fair, it's like they may as well, because it's like, I'm not going to do it again. So if you need your moment, it's about to happen. Because everyone, I like this part too. When someone's like, do it again. He's like, happily, I can do it again if you order another Bananas Foster.
Yeah. I also like when he like rolls up to the table and he's like, I've never made one of these before, so just be careful. And that's just like, that's his like line he uses on everybody.
His canned server bit.
Yeah, yep. It's like we would each have our line if we were lighting things on fire all night long tableside at restaurants. I don't know. There's got to be like, there's something to it though, that it's just kind of like, you know, and it goes on to say in this article, like the fascination with fire, right?
Absolutely.
That everybody has. It's just like playing. And then to make something that's so luxurious and sweet from like something that's so like mystical and dangerous is like a really fun thing.
Well,
I think this is a great article.
Speaking of dangerous, he goes on to say that very untrained, it's an accident that can happen to anyone, but this happened in Madrid several months ago. two people died and 10 people got injured in an Italian restaurant on a Friday evening in Madrid. They tried to flambé something. It got like out of control.
Yeah.
So you're like, what are you even flambéing? This didn't even, you know, I'm thinking of Italian food and those usually don't go hand in hand. But what happens is
this is in Madrid. So yeah.
Yes.
But the Italian restaurant. Yeah.
Italian restaurant in Madrid. But basically the flame got out of control and caught all the plastic plants in the restaurant on fire, literally spread like wildfire, and it enveloped everyone in there. People had trouble getting out. Two fucking died from the flambé.
In like 10 minutes.
Yes.
That's how quick it went. I mean, I would say it's also Spain, which is like gastronomy capital, like the planet. So I'm assuming they're just like, we let our pizzas on fire here. That's how we do it differently. Super tragic, but just goes to show that this is like dangerous. This is a dangerous culinary art.
Yes.
You know?
Very much so. Very, very scary. In headlines, also very, very frightening. And this goes along with I dropped a TikTok about ranch dressing.
Yeah.
We are facing a shortage of ranch dressing, and it's not Taylor Swift's fault. She didn't like you know, she didn't register 30,000 people to, you know, buy ranch. I love how she gets people to vote. It's incredible. But essentially, because a lot of people don't know that the parent company specifically of Hidden Valley Ranch is Clorox. Clorox Bleach owns tons of food and cleaning products. So that's not really that unusual. It's sort of like
under the umbrella. It's like the Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah,
like
or Kraft. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
But essentially, Clorox got cyber hacked, and for some reason, it has caused a shortage in the availability of bottles of ranch that you would find in the grocery store and the dry mix packet.
Wow.
And people are flipping the fuck out.
It makes sense. I just saw this recipe for like the best roasted broccoli you could make, and guess what the secret ingredient is?
A dry ranch packet.
Yeah.
Fuck yes. Mm-hmm. I love it. But people, let us know how you're doing out there. I still have not seen sriracha back on shelves. And
it's not back. We got it. We paid $14 for a big bottle of it on Amazon. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like, mama needs her basic bitch sriracha back in her life. You know, like, yeah. I think people are just going to start making their own ranch. Honestly, it's tastier. Bite me.
Yes, we have our friend of the pod, Kirsten. She, you know, made tubs of homemade delicious ranch, sent us photos, and we respect that.
Yeah.
Anyways, just be careful out there, guys, you know.
No wrestling for ranch, guys.
No wrestling for ranch, or just, you know, maybe make harder decisions about how much ranch do I need on this pizza today, because I might have to start rationing my ranch.
It's very true. I wonder what restaurants are going to do. And then you wonder who's going to get like first dibs, like on what ranch, because it always goes. Because I feel like all of the restaurants have first dibs on the sriracha supply. Like all the Thai restaurants are still pretty flush with like sriracha and sambal right now. So I wonder how the trickle is going to happen. And I wonder if like little sides of ranch are going to start going up and up and up.
Yep.
Who knows?
Yep. When there was no ketchup during the pandemic and people were like, you know, I still have my Heinz ketchup packets that I was ready to use as currency if the grid collapsed. I was going to be like, can I buy an axe? I'll give you 15 packets of Heinz ketchup, you know, sort of thing. Anyways.
It's so good. Oh, boy. Well, Godspeed to all you ranch lovers out there. Oh, my God. Ugh.
Like I said, be safe. Be safe out there. So guess what? In lieu of a server submitted story, we are going to have someone who's very near and dear to the show. Basically, what do you call it? Weave a yarn?
Spin a yarn
Of his own personal ghost story. Because y'all didn't send us any. But anyways.
This one's good. It's really quite great.
Yes, but let's please welcome to the podcast for our server submitted story. Our very own Brian Lucas.
Hello.
Hi.
Brian.
you know, Brian and I first met, and I don't know. God, we've been together for like 18 years or so. And I don't know. Like, it was pretty quickly into our relationship that we like got on the subject of like scary stories and have you ever seen a ghost and have you not ever seen a ghost. So he told me this story, which I've known for a very long time, which happened in college, right?
Yeah. This was in, I started my undergrad in Springfield, Missouri, what is now Missouri State. And Springfield has claimed to be one of the most haunted cities. I feel like there's all kinds of cities that have claimed that. So I guarantee Charleston has more ghosts than Springfield. But
oh, yeah. It's a different vibe. I feel like it's like a born again Christian like ghost vibe.
Yeah.
Like-
I mean, Springfield is right in the buckle of the Bible Belt. So that might play into it. But anyway, so this was mid 90s. I was moving out of a place, going to get a house with a kid who was in the theater department with me. We're looking for a place. Find out this girl who's in the theater department with us owned a house that she lived in for about a year, maybe two. And she was moving out of the house into an apartment. We're like, why would you move out of a house that you own to go to an apartment? Uh-oh.
People do it here in LA all the time, you know?
Yeah, and she, you know, and she said, well, the house has bad energy, was all she would say. It has bad energy. And she was a bit of a hippie. And so we're like, okay, rolled our eyes.
You're like, okay, hippie. Like, yeah, disregard the hippie lady and what she has to say.
Oh, yeah. We definitely, you know, we're like, oh, well, whatever. You don't know what you're talking about. So he and I decided we're going to move in with another friend of ours, Travis, and this girl who I didn't know, but Nick knew from high school. So we all start moving in, and pretty quickly things were off. We didn't necessarily clock it, but like the vibe in the house was weird. Our interactions between people were weird. All of a sudden, the girl just ghosted us, decided she didn't want to live with us because Travis was gay, and she didn't know he was gay, and it made her uncomfortable. And we were like, well, one, like, nobody was hiding that he was gay. It was pretty obvious. Thought it was a known. But okay, homophobe, get out, but good riddance to you. And we bring in another guy, Mike, who I was good friends with, also in our theater department. So it was four guys. Pretty quickly, after we moved in, two of the guys, Nick and Travis, left town for some reason, holiday something, and it was probably Christmas holidays because it was cold, and Mike lived in this back part of the house that was a add-on to the house, and so it didn't get heated very well, and so he was going to stay in Travis's room because it was warmer. So we were hanging out. At some point we decided to go to bed, and I'm laying in my bed and thought Mike was in his room, and so I hear somebody walking around in the living room, like very clear footsteps. And I like, Mike, is that you? And from the other bedroom, he's like, no, that wasn't you. No, okay. So we flip out, like we find there was a baseball bat in a closet. We grab the baseball
classic,
bat.
Classic.
Huddled, you know, up against each other, like going through a haunted house with this baseball bat, looking for whatever person made this sound. Didn't find anything, didn't see anything, walked all around the yard, outside, inside, no sign of anything. We were both like, we clearly heard somebody walking around in the house. Okay. So I think I was 20 at the time. He was probably 21. The two of us slept in the same bed together. We were so terrified. We were like, somebody or something was in the living room. Okay. That next morning, we like, okay, we were hearing things. We're overreacting. Okay.
You're trying to rationalize the unknown. Yeah.
Exactly.
And this is how every script for every horror movie goes, right? but it's real.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So that nothing happened weird like that happens for a while. But then all of a sudden, like all the energy like between the roommates, like everything was very volatile. Like there were Nick and Travis were having a secret love affair, and Nick was, you know, nobody knew this was going on, but they would get in these drag out fights.
Wow.
Where like dishes were being thrown against wall. I came home one day and found all my dishes smashed because one of them thought they were the other one's dishes. Oops. And then it was happening with me and Mike. We had been friends, never had any kind of argument. We're constantly fighting with each other, screaming. I things that I never had with friends before, that kind of this just really volatile energy, which was, you know, we didn't clock it as being anything weird, you know, tied right to the house. We were just like, okay, well, it's strange. Okay. Then at one point Mike comes in and starts telling me about how he got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and walked out into the living room and hears a voice say, "Get out." And he, I don't know if he's trying to like rationalize it or what, but he was like, "I didn't feel threatened. It didn't seem aggressive. It was just a matter of fact, get out.
Hey, this is my time. What are you doing in here?"
Yeah. That's what he said. So he was like, "Okay, I'll get out." And he was like, after that, he never like walked into the main part of the house in the middle of the night by himself. He was like, "I'm just going to stay back here in my room." He had his own like little bathroom. And he was like, "There's no reason for me to go out there in the middle of the night."
No, not at all.
But he didn't really, you know, none of this is getting communicated between us all that much. I mean, he mentioned that, but he didn't like really pass on how terrified he was, even though because he kept saying, "Well, it didn't seem aggressive." So Nick had been living in the basement, and the basement was this unfinished basement, dirty college house basement where, you know, they had set it. I don't even think he had set it up. It was the previous roommate had set up like this little seating living room area with like these old seats from a minivan and like a shitty coffee table. And then there were like, you know, shitty college posters all over the wall.
It's a classy setup in college, baby.
And a futon. And, you know, it was like a social area when mm-hmm. we had parties. And, you know, he was down. One day he just comes up and says, "I don't want to live in the basement anymore." I was like, "Okay, why?" And he's like, "I just don't like it down there. I don't want to live in the basement." I'm like, "Okay, fine. I'll switch rooms with you. I don't really care." So we switch rooms. I'm down there for a couple weeks. One night in the middle of the night, I just wake up and I roll over and I'm facing the living room setup, these van seats. And I see this like hazy image of a little boy, red t-shirt, blue baseball cap, just sitting on the seat. And I'm like, okay, I'm half awake. So I'm dreaming. I'm seeing something. I kind of like roll over, come back and look at it. It's gone. I'm like, okay, I'm imagining things. Go back to sleep. I don't know. I was stupid. I don't know why it didn't freak me out completely, but I went back to sleep. Next morning, sitting in the kitchen, eating breakfast, and there's three of the four roommates in there. Nick, who had been down there previously, was there. And I was like, yeah, it's weird. I had like this weird dream last night where I like rolled over and I saw this little boy sitting on like these seats, and he like turns white and looks at me, and he was like, "Did he have a red t-shirt and a blue baseball cap?" And I was like, what? And he's like, "That's why I don't want to live down there anymore." And I was like, "You fucking asshole. Like, first of all, don't, like, you just want somebody else to live down there?" And so we start talking about it, and we're like, you know, we both saw the same thing. We then go to Andrea, the girl who owned the house, because at this point we're starting to put two to two. We're like, okay, this
all
house.
Right. I think it's time to bring the hippie girl we all didn't want to listen to back into the fray.
And she says, you know, starts telling us about weird experiences they had. Again, it was she said it was mostly how people who lived in the house interacted with each other, that uh-huh. there was bad energy involved in relationships within the house, but that everybody had like one little instant where they would hear something, see something. Nobody else saw, but Nick and I saw this little boy. But she claimed that the seat she had gotten from the neighbor across the street from the house who had lost his little boy in a car accident, not involving these car seats that they had, but a different vehicle. And she was like, it was probably that boy. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know that I saw the same thing that Nick saw, which was this little boy just sitting on the seat with red t-shirt, blue baseball cap. And I don't, again, being young and stupid, I didn't like instantly go, I'm not living down there anymore. And like, now I'd be like, no,
fuck this.
Sure. I mean, that's part of it. Youth is definitely a part of like it for sure. And you're just like, whatever. Plus like knowing you and the kind of sleeper you are.
Yeah.
You're a wild sleeper and you'd be happy to sleep through anything.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, there had to have been two different entities in the house though. Don't you think?
I do.
It sounds like it.
I do wonder about that because I did live in another place that had a little bit of a poltergeist in the same city, like two blocks away. And that one was very unthreatening. It was almost like a helpful entity. And I never, you know, didn't bother.
Yeah, you were telling Brooke and I last night, like that ghost was like, I'll help you do your homework.
Yeah. It was like, oh, you're putting off studying this, and then hear a thump in the room, and I went in, and my
Ryan,
book was open.
Better get your studying,
you know,
done.
Things like that. But
hit the balls.
But this one where the kid, yeah, I don't know if there was something going on with the house, and then the kid was separate with these seats, you know. But it, and then you know, I never saw it again. It was only the one time, but the energy. Only got better. Eventually, Mike moved out, and then we had a girl who was in our department who was in a bad relationship and needed to get out quickly, so she moved into our place, and then never had anything after that. So I don't know if the female, I mean, obviously, Andrea, who owned the house, had issues when she was there, so I don't know, but...
I feel like it's good that you guys like started talking about it and recognizing it. Maybe that's like kind of what made it.
Maybe.
Who knows? Ugh. But regardless, I would have been freaked the fuck out.
Yeah.
I personally have never had experiences where I've been like, I mean, I have you know, psychic ability to some point. I am a total empath. There's like so much where I'm just like, I feel like,
you're like, how come they're not appearing? Like, I'm so open.
I'm a vessel too, guys. I'm okay with it. I don't really need it, but
I've never, other than those two places, I've never had anything
right
before or since.
I mean, other than having like the overwhelming, like when I went to my mom's house and I could like smell like my stepdad's like tobacco when I like rolled into the house. That's like the only time that I've had anything, you know, but still. And I was like, oh, this is real as fuck. Like, this is,
yes,
you know, and it was really comforting, you know? So, and I know you've had very similar experiences too, Brooke.
Yes. With the olfactory haunting of like my grandma's here. Like, this is crazy. It's like, I was looking at an empty chair in the driveway and I was like, there, like my grandmother's perfume is emanating from this chair outside. And she's like keeping me company while I'm like doing things, going back and forth from the garage. There was just no reason for that smell to be so concentrated out of nowhere and so specific. And then I told my brother that, and he's like, I was out walking dogs and got haunted and overwhelmed by grandma's perfume also. So it's like she visited both of us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, as much as I've never been haunted, I tell you what, having to close down a restaurant at night when you're the last one in and it's dark and you turn out the lights, my ass like run. I've like run out. Don't look behind you. Just like go, 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 go,
go, go, go.
Yeah.
So that the spirits need to come out and play, you know?
They do. I know. That's how I feel about it. I was like, if I came back in, I have actually come back into places before where I just feel energy. If I forget something and I have to turn the lights back on, I'm always like, sorry, sorry, sorry. I just forgot a thing. And then I like leave. I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know I'm talking to anybody.
That's how you don't get a get out. You know what I'm saying?
I'm like, sorry. I know. Well, you guys are probably like, I see this thing. I'm out.
Well, it's like theaters, you know, so many theaters are haunted that they're the idea of the ghost light. You leave a light on the stage for the ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, and every theater in the country, if not the world, has a ghost light. It's also
Do
so
restaurants
that,
have ghost lights? They should.
I mean, it's also so people don't fall into the orchestra pit.
Right.
Things like
yes,
that.
Right. Yes. Don't fall in the pit. That's also That's good. That's good advice. Brian, thanks for coming on and sharing your journey. Way to drop all the names. Hopefully everybody's okay with... No, I'm kidding.
Sure. Yeah.
They're not listening.
They're probably not
listening. Fine. We're all adults now. Yeah. Happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Have fun. Be safe. And
Let's jump into some really fun, crazy, spookier bar stories.
And you can email us at sideworkpod@gmail.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, welcome back to part two. It's Halloween, guys. We're back at it. Let's just jump right back in. If you guys missed part one, though, we've been covering spooky haunted restaurants. Duh. What else would we talk about?
Yeah. And in general, if you just can't get enough of spooky season anything, you can go back and look around these dates for every, you know, consecutive year. And we have done usually 2 to 3 episodes all in the manner of spooky over the past year. So feel free to go back and visit those. Those were really fun to do, too.
I mean, if you're
Henry Zebrowski and some other fun peeps on the show in the past.
If you're lucky, next year we'll do 4 episodes that are Halloween themed. Oh, well, the whole month.
We kicked off spooky season with the health inspector.
That's very true.
So totally frightening. Did.
Okay, so let's talk about Formosa Cafe.
This is in
Los Angeles. So this place, it's pretty famous. I think it's like, you know, donned a lot of celebrities over the years. So after shuttering in 2016, this historic Hollywood haunt, part of which is fashioned from an old trolley car, recently made a comeback. So it's back with its famous green neon sign out in front, and it reopened this past June. So though it underwent a refresh, it still holds true to its old Hollywood roots with a black and white celebrity headshots everywhere, memorabilia on display, terrazzo floors, vintage bars, red leather booths, I can speak. So basically, speaking of booths, you want to request booth number 8, the favorite table of former owner Lem Kwan, who reportedly still haunts the place. His grandson, who used to own it, talked to staff members who saw what they thought was a ghost and described him as having a strange walk and crumpled cardigan. Okay. The grandson was like, that's my grandfather. And he felt that his grandfather was very much keeping an eye on things. And there have been other reports of staff members feeling pushed or pinched while standing in front of the booth, most likely by Kwan, who wanted them to get back to work.
Oh.
This is maybe my favorite this season, is to have a former owner/manager's ghost haunting a place who just keeps reminding you, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean, even in the afterlife.
Polish the glassware, okay? I was just like his name Lem Kwan. I was like, he sounds like he is, you know, Asian American.
Taiwanese American.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, but listen to this. Like the fact. Wait. So we can go modern day. Mm-hmm. Oh, girl. The Taiwanese American menu has the. It says a mix of retro, classic, and tiki cocktail.
I know. It'd be really fun to go to. We should absolutely go.
Looking it up right now. Which area is it in?
I think probably West Hollywood, I would imagine.
Yeah, all the good super haunted shit is
Hollywood, I don't know.
Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood, California. Mm-hmm. You guessed it. Oh, very fun. I'm really into that. Ooh.
All right.
Love it.
Checking them off the list. I'm scared. I don't like to know. I'm just like, I've been to, you know, actually, as when we get into things and a lot of these restaurants that we've gone down the line, I've been like, oh, I've been to so many of these places, but you know, I'm okay.
And I live to tell the tale. Oof. Jesus Christ. Well, this one's this story about this bar and grill in Georgia, the PI Bar and Grill. This is pretty glum. This is pretty macabre, speaking of. So, like, as we were saying, many cocktails, many sayings, and many terms for people have a history and a story behind them. We just found out last episode where the word hooker comes from. Okay. but at the PI Bar and Grill, they have a cocktail called the Emily. It's a gin number, and it's sold in Augusta, Georgia, as we mentioned at the PI Bar and Grill. So basically, this spot has been in the town for more than a century, and it's had a lot of famous guests, and one of the most famous was a woman named Emily, who's been sitting around as long as the bar's open, folks. All right. She's not a 100-year-old woman. She's been there as a ghost. So basically, legend has it on her wedding day, Emily, our friend here, was getting dressed in the bridal suite at the Partridge Inn when she found out her fiancé-to-be, day of the wedding, had been shot in a case of mistaken identity while riding his horse through town.
Classic Deadwood.
That is, again, this just all goes back to Deadwood. Basically, we can thank all of our current hauntings on Deadwood era. You
most
know.
Likely. Yeah, Gold Rush era type shit.
Yes. But our friend Emily, and honestly, admittedly, was so grief-stricken that she would not take that damn wedding dress off for weeks.
Even though,
my God, you know, people were trying to get Emily to snap out of it and, you know, to overcome her grief. And she had like hot suitors all around town trying to be like, I will take care of you. You know, probably really good intention men trying to, you know,
make it right.
Yeah, make it right and marry her. She absolutely said no to it all, never recovered, and died of a broken heart. So to this day at the Partridge Hotel, the PI Inn, guests report a beautiful girl with long dark hair who wanders the halls and staircases. Guess what she's in, Andrea?
A wedding dress?
Yeah, she's in a wedding dress. Just wandering up and down the halls waiting for her groom's arrival, which, as we know, didn't come.
Not going to happen, Emily. I'm sorry.
So basically, when you order an Emily from the bar, you need to toast her namesake and send her a blessing. And that the signature cocktail is apparently a purple hue, which is kind of cool and creepy and very, you know, ghoulish and ghastly. So it's from a mix of butterfly pea flower tea and blueberry. That is so Georgia. And lavender syrup, some lavender simple syrup, you know, just having a lavender
toast, Emily. You got to toast Emily at the bar.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Poor scorned Emily. Just truly.
Truly.
Ghosted at the altar.
In her stinky, stinky wedding dress.
I am like the pit stains. You know that, especially back in those times, they were all long sleeved and probably up to your chin with like a lace, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
neck.
Yeah.
And
gorgeous.
That's what I like. Don't get me wrong. I loved, you know, Andrea and Brian just celebrated not that long ago in October a big anniversary.
12.
Just 12, you know.
12. Yeah.
Pretty great. But
yeah.
You had the beautiful sleeveless number where...
Yeah, I had like a real like vintage, like a 40s glam situation going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is the girls could breathe, you know?
Oh, yeah, and for sure.
Our friend Emily. Yep, all the way up to the neck. Mm-hmm. We all know it was hard to find a bath back in those
probably
days.
Probably was
too,
like corseted also. You know, you wear a corset for weeks, things go bad.
Do you think, okay, my bet is Emily was just getting into the bath bucket with the wedding dress on and soaking
sure.
in it.
Absolutely.
With a bottle of whiskey.
And like saying, maybe like with her, like I can just see like her bouquet and then like, you know, like flowers hanging in the bath too. I know. Poor
she's
Emily.
She's giving Corpse Bride, but Corpse Bride who just is really drunk with a bottle of whiskey going, cocksucker. I will not stop. That is,
I love how you're like 10 years behind the times.
20 years more than behind that. The
no,
times.
No, Deadwood didn't come out 20 nope. years ago.
Deadwood came out 20 years ago, honey. It's really fucking old.
Oh, all right. Well, what do you know?
I know.
No.
Yes. It's an old fucking show.
All right. Here's what's going to happen. We're going to move on. Brian's right, going to look fine. It up. And if we have to stop in the middle of the next goddamn spooky bar, 2004. Wow.
Nearly. 20 years ago.
That's crazy. What is time? Anyway.
I know.
Anywho. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So basically, we're kind of moving into a few different areas now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where now either the specifically bars are frequented by serial killers,
mm-hmm.
or maybe the bartenders, a serial killer, and just bartenders who have really great ghost stories. So shall we begin?
Yeah, let's begin. You kick her off, Brooke.
Okay, so there is this really great story. Let me find it. Sorry. Okay. This was compliments of Esquire, and there is a waterfront bar in Washington, the state of Washington, so the Pacific Northwest, that is considered the roughest bar and the most murderous bar in America.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in Bellingham, Washington, and I guess it's called the Bellingham, mm-hmm. but I also saw it was called like, you know, that it was like, whatever. But I thought it was called like a seafood saloon or whatever. So we'll call it the Bellingham because that's what
Red Lobster.
Saying.
You thought it was called Red Lobster.
I thought it was called Joe's Crab Shack. Anyways. All right. So I guess it's called the Bellingham, even though the sign out front says differently. But this saloon has slung booze to no less than three of America's most notorious serial killers. Not only has Ted Bundy fucking hung out there, probably on one of his jailbreaks, right? When he was just like running around, hiding in the woods and shit. Also, if you know about the Hillside Stranglers, one of the two of those fucking wretched humans, Kenneth Bianchi, also hung out at the Bellingham. And recently, the DC sniper, John Muhammad. I mean, and that to go on is, they have so many stories of like, those are the three big ones, but they've gone on to house several murderers and small-time felons.
Just not serial murderers, just regular plain day murderers. Yeah.
Right. Those are the big guys. Don't get me wrong. So they've had a longtime bartender there named Wally Oyen, which I'm assuming I'm pronouncing correctly. And he's waited on Bianchi back in the day. He's like, he was the nicest guy in the world. You know, he's like, so to find out he is a total serial killer helped me not be surprised when I found out that Muhammad was also a sniper. And because is he a serial killer or do you call a mass murderer? Well, I guess he's a serial killer.
A serial murderer? Like,
serial
I
murderer.
Guess,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was a sniper.
Right.
I mean, we're not. Yeah, we're not a murder podcast, so whatever. But regardless, he really terrified DC and killed many innocent people just the same. But basically, his point is he was also another quiet, easygoing, nice patron who just drank beer, made no trouble. Although he makes a point to say, motherfucker didn't tip. But then they go on to say there was another regular named James Allen Kinney who was convicted of the 1998 murder of a Massachusetts woman. And then he goes on to say, now that guy was a fucking asshole. So like we probably could have seen that coming. But essentially, it's like a like I mentioned, a dimly lit, creaky wooden floor, barnacle encrusted on stilts above the bay sort of
you know, hang.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like a real ding. Wanderer.
Scar, car, car.
Fog's rolling in. It has $2 beer and $4 clam chowder. Would 100% pay the vomit fee to go hang out there.
Would pay vomit fee 100%. Would for pay sure.
vomit fee. And people are like, why? Why do the bloodthirsty humans of this planet choose the waterfront at the Bellingham, you know, to sit and sort of commingle among the public? But one of the other regulars, who's not a murderer, he has a theory. He's like, hey, listen, the bar is the lowest point in the hilly town, and it's as far as anyone can run in America without leaving the country. That's how close it is to Canada.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's like, all the troublemakers roll into town, and then just old gravity itself just kind of brings them down that sidewalk to the edge, and there's the Bellingham. But more or less, here's what they do know, and it could be counting. For the former waterfront drinking patrons, either now incarcerated or in penitentiaries or in hell, have been convicted of or await trial for a minimum of 46 murders.
Wow.
Regulars. There are 46 murders on the book based off the regulars.
All right. Okay.
That's crazy. I want to go there.
I mean, Washington's
Washington is Creepsville, man.
There's a lot going on. It's a real Twin Peaks. It's Twin Peaks territory. And this would be because, like, is One Eye Jack's in Canada? I forget.
They cross the border to Canada.
Yeah. So this is like right there.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Okay.
For all of our young listeners, highly recommend the series Twin Peaks. Don't
I think some of them might know. They just did like a updated series, so maybe some of them have gone back.
The original one from the 90s.
I just met it in the zeitgeist as of late. Okay, so this next story, Brooke, also takes place in Washington. Okay.
Yes.
So this is in Aberdeen, Washington, and it's the urban legend of Billy Gold, one of the creepiest serial killers in Washington. So if I can get the pop-ups to go away,
I know
spooky,
the pop-ups on these
spooky
articles.
Pop-ups.
Also, to be noted, long ass time ago.
Yeah, that's true. Billy Gold, all right, reportedly had a baby face, and he used his innocent good looks to get away with murder, plus theft and bombings, and a host of other neighborhood mishaps. So he says, it says in the history books that he killed large numbers of migrants when he worked as a bartender. Okay. Yeah. In the building that is now called Billy's Restaurant in Aberdeen. So over the course of a few years, he also murdered a minimum of 41 sailors and a max of just 52 regular men, basically not enlisted. His victims were random sailors who were traveling alone visiting Aberdeen. Sailors often stopped inside the building to check for any mail, chit chat with other sailors and laborers. And like that, mean old Billy would mark up his prey and steal their valuables. And he basically would he'd kill them. He'd shoot them or choke them or just like blunt trauma to the head blows to death. That was Billy in a nutshell. So he was finally caught by authorities, and that's what finally ended his killing spree. And he served time in prison for being a serial killer before sent out to live out the rest of his days in an asylum. Oh, boy.
I mean, my God. Yeah. No shit. You think that guy needs a timeout?
Yeah, that guy needs a super big timeout. So some folks in Aberdeen say that Billy's ghost still haunts the former brothel in East Heron, where he would do some murdering. This guy just murdered everybody in this town. He's like, I'll do some murdering over here, then I go to work and bartender and do some murdering over there. Yeah, for sure. But maybe he's looking for one of his old treasures that he stole from a sailor. Maybe he thinks he can kill people from beyond the grave. Who knows? But weird things have been reported from inside the bar over the years. Like, you know, the basic thing, like, you know, drinking glasses flying themselves across the room.
Just
all that. Yeah.
The overwhelming presence of like a racist piece of shit wanting to murder you.
Basically like someone who's just like, oh, I'll murder you for anything. What do you got? Like, I got a taste for it. Now it's so easy, I'll just murder you. I mean, that's what it is. It's like you do it a couple times. That's just like your shtick. You're just like, you know.
Well, and again,
always like to claim that, you know, y'all know we are not a true crime podcast. We just are, you know, so forgive
dabbling,
me if I get things
dabbling,
wrong.
One toe in.
One toe in, but it's just this time of year when it comes up. But it's, we don't know how many true serial killers have existed throughout time.
Right.
Because of, you know, the way we're able to now record and track and actually have the police involved. And man, this is a great read. If any of you love a good read, maybe I'm recommending something stupid, but Devil in the White City is like such a perfect read for that time.
Really, truly.
When like nobody knew what the fuck was going on. You couldn't track people. Mm-hmm. And this motherfucker, you know, was opening basically a hotel to house people who were so excited to come to Chicago for the World's Fair. Mm-hmm. And it was just his elaborate murder dungeon.
I mean, if you had money, you could do whatever you wanted to. Yeah.
Right. And just nobody questioned. And it was so hard because all everyone did was, you know, communicate through the post and correspondence. Yeah. And it was normal to just wait for a letter for several weeks.
And
just to
be, and by then your sister, your daughter, your aunt, whatever has already been dead for 2 months. Who knows, you know?
Oh God, that crazy motherfucker. But this crazy bartender that you just spoke about, I mean, he is giving me Devil in the White City vibes all day long.
Absolutely. And finally, they're just like, well, send him to prison. He's still going to get, he still got tried. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, which of course, I guess that's how it is. But I guess I'm just like, if you figure out, like, did they know he killed that many people originally? Did it come out like after he went into the asylum? Like, who knows how all the information like, you know, spilled out eventually. But it's like, you got a lot of corpses building up around here, you know? It's
Yeah, dude. Well, if we're speaking of Chicago, we should bring up the L&L.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah. So we do have a really fun list that we're going to run down of more bars that serial killers would hang out at. So the L&L, which is on Clark and Belmont, Chicago, Illinois, in the Lakeview neighborhood. The L&L has been known over the years as a total, I mean, Gacy and Dahmer hung out there. Like, maybe on the same night, who knows? There's been talk of, like, it was a big punk rock bar back in the day, a really big punk rock area, you
or
know, but also
like counterculture and
and right on the edge of Boys Town, which is the gay neighborhood. And so Dahmer was known to like sit in the front window and like stare like a creep at like the punk rockers and like people walking by.
Where was he in Wisconsin?
Milwaukee.
I was curious, like, just because, I mean, I'm like some big history buff on Dahmer. Right. Did he frequent Chicago?
Yeah, he would drive down. There's a bunch of bars. He also went to Old Town L House. He went there too.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Ew. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I hung out at all the same bars that Dahmer's hung out at.
Yeah.
And
Dahmer would. And what better thing to do than just to drive straight shot like south 50 miles away or, you know, at roundabouts to just go pick up someone in a town where nobody knows your face, nobody knows your name, and just drive them right back up to Milwaukee to your lair, you know?
Right. And at this point, we're still talking about, you know, especially with Dahmer, like the 90s. And late 80s, 90s. And it's just like people are still, they're so transient, especially if they're gay or, you know, living an alternative lifestyle. And they all come to the big cities is what they do.
Right. For sure. But I have hung out at the L&L many a times and had a great time. They used to have free tampons there in the bathroom. It was fabulous. It was like one of the first bars I ever went to where I was just like, just free piles of tampons for the ladies. And I'd always like put an extra one in my purse. Thanks so much, L&L, for that.
Thanks, L&L.
But I used to go there, man, great jukebox. I actually have been there on a Halloween before, you know, like it's a great place. And I mean, yes, of course, holds a lot of history and it's crazy. And I think from the very beginning, I think somebody said to me, we're going to go to this bar, L&L. Jeffrey Dahmer used to hang out there. Like that, it was like premised as such, like the first time I ever went. And it's when I worked at ding, 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 Buca di Beppo. One of my coworkers took me there for the first time because it was like two blocks from Buca.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my yep. God, that's crazy. You did say buka again, so I had to hit it. But
buka.
Don't make me. don't make me.
Don't make me do it.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago too is just one of those cities where you're like, it fucking burned the ground and got rebuilt. So it has creepy history, you know, all throughout it.
Oh, I mean, all of these bars that like they hung out, like all these serial killers hung out were like basically dive bars. But I want to bring up the jury room, right? So the jury room's in Santa Cruz, and that's where Ed Kemper hung out. And it was a cop bar.
Right.
And would just like he was Big Ed. They nicknamed him Big Ed. He was super charming, as they all fucking are. He was 6'9". He was 300 pounds. And yeah, and the bar was right across the street from the courthouse. And so that's where all the off-duty cops hung out. And he would just like hang out there and listen because they were talking about him.
Right. Like not him by name, but what he had done.
No, but his crimes. Yeah.
Oh, what? Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like they didn't know who had perpetrated them yet.
No. But like he was there to like get the dirt to see if they were like onto him or not. And of course.
You keep your enemies, you keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. You know
Yeah. I've never hung out at a cop bar before. Your dad was a cop. Did you ever go to any cop bars when you were a kid?
There was not a cop bar.
When you were a kid?
Yep, nope, not when I was a kid. Nope, Andrea.
Know what I mean.
No, but like, it's also because I was from a smaller town, whereas like, I think this was the norm for California or like Boston, obviously, like everything, or Maryland, like we're talking about, like in Baltimore, New York, Chicago, so on and so forth. Just because, you know, all of the departments were just so many, and so, you know, so everything was essentially a cop bar.
Sure.
But yes, in my neighborhood in Brooklyn when I lived there, I've told you about this spot called Farrell's, which was a Brooklyn firefighter and cop bar.
Yes.
That Jocelyn and I lived really close to, and they served everything in giant styrofoam cups, the biggest mixed drinks you've ever had. Women were not allowed in unless you were escorted in by like your husband or your friend who was a cop or firefighter who had the okay. They finally loosened their restrictions a little bit by the end of the time I lived there. And we were like, fuck it, let's go in there. And then we were like, we hate this place. Like, we love the giant drinks and we are, you know, Midwestern weirdos, but you could just feel the shitty aggression from just, you know, the boys in blue and the protected wall of silence and all that attitude and behavior. And so no thanks. Yeah, that's like a haunted bar for me. All the crimes they've committed that, you know, they don't get charged with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, I was going to say, what smarter thing than Ed Kemper, a true sociopath, and, you know, who's probably getting horny listening to them recount the crime scenes and just sitting there delighted with himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't. No, Eileen Wuornos, I would never go to this bar ever. You know, as she was arrested in 1991 for being a serial killer. We've all seen Monster, I think, or, you know, it's worth the watch if you've never seen it. I don't think I ever need to watch it again personally. But she hung out at the Last Resort, which was a biker hangout, you know,
mm-hmm.
Where I don't, again, divey bar. I think a lot
sure,
of
you can,
transients in and out bike, you know. Yeah.
So speaking of my dad being a police officer, so her grandparents lived in Michigan and she often came around to stay with them when she was in trouble. And after they had, you know, discovered that she was on the lam and she'd committed these crimes, my dad was part of the police force that had been alerted to look out for serial killer Eileen Wuornos.
Wow.
Who might be coming to our area in our suburbs outside of Rochester. And they were all stationed ready to fucking capture her and take her down. But then she made this detour down to Florida instead.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? And the other thing I've said too is that my dad is just like a serial killer magnet. I don't know what the problem is. Probably a serial killer, I'll find out. But
he's like a bar in Washington. Oh boy.
So his really good friend from high school, her daughter, who ended up being a few years older than me before they, you know, my parents had me,
babysat me for a bit, but they were Michigan based for a long time. But then his friend, you know, her husband and the kids got a great job in Chicago, and it was for Xerox, which they had a company party for Xerox back in the day, and they hired a clown to come entertain mm-mm. them.
No.
And I have a photo of my old babysitter being held by John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
I'll post it again for fun, for old times.
Incredible.
Sake.
It should be rolled out every year for sure.
Every year.
Now, this bar we cannot go to, Brooke, and it's not because Charles Manson used to hang out there. So this is City View Tavern in Cincinnati, Ohio. And according to Cincinnati Magazine, on multiple occasions, Manson apparently threatened to jump off the bar's deck after taking a few shots of tequila. And some locals say he actually did throw himself off the ledge. And the owners decided to stop serving tequila to prevent Manson from coming in. And the policy has been upheld to this day.
Ugh, yeah, I don't
so
want to go there.
So we can't go there.
No.
What do you mean? I just feel like they should bring it back and just have a drink called the Manson. I mean, I don't know that we should. Maybe we shouldn't like celebrate serial killers by having drinks named after them. Probably not. But yeah, that's, I mean, of course he'd be like, of course he would like drink tequila and want to throw himself off things. That's, he wanted the attention. That guy loved attention.
Yeah, he was so dramatic.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like when Tom Cruise was jumping on the couch on Oprah, you know, just little guys.
Oh my goodness.
I'm kidding about that. So Richard Ramirez frequented and knew, you know, wait staff and bartenders at a place called Margaritas, and nobody there trusted this creepy motherfucker. If you want to expand upon this, I mean, everyone knew that he was a petty, you know, thief and kind of a weird dude getting off, you know, real weird Satanist vibes. And then he was like, you know, everyone's just like, he was reckless and definitely giving signs of being a bit of a psychopath because he cared about nothing.
This place is still open. It's 24/7 in Skid Row. So that sounds great. We should do that, Brooke.
Yeah. And I don't want to go to that bar. It sounds like someone going there to specifically, you know, get into some shit.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, there's going to be like bus tours of like people going in like to places. I mean, I don't know if they're actually stopping and going in, but you know, there's all sorts of serial killer tours, haunted ghost tours where people are definitely going and hanging out and seeing these places. So,
like some of them, you know, where I'm like, listen, I stand by my wish to go to the Bellingham in Washington and more for my Twin Peaks sort of like.
Right.
Fandom more than, you know, more so than being like, oh, cool. Like, I think like, you know, Ted Bundy's so awesome and that it was so awesome he was here. But it's also like, what is it? It's almost like you want to feel the creepy gravitational pull of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like whatever it is about these areas. What's the draw? And as we know, like there are many, many weird spots all over the country that are
all over the world.
Energy vortexes.
Yeah.
Too, where. They might have built a bar on an energy vortex.
It's very true, especially for people who are narcissistic serial killers. But I think we should wrap it up from there. I'm creeped out. But you guys,
Yeah, the serial killers are way spookier than ghosts.
Some people are just like accidentally. That's just the lay of the land is you'd get shit slit in your throat slit by a prostitute or your wife and get tossed off the thing. And that's just how life was.
That was just the old West, my friend.
Yeah, that was just the old West. So the new West, no thank you. Too much going on. But God, that wraps up another Halloween spooky season, guys. I think that's it, Brooke. We'll have to update you on our Halloween parties next time we talk to you.
Yeah, any of the antics that take place has not happened yet. You know, the weekend's coming up. Have fun. Everyone be safe. Enjoy. If you, again, have like a crazy party that either your bar or restaurant is throwing, we would love to hear about it. You can always send in spooky and or Halloween related anything anytime. We will read it.
Yeah, sideworkpod@gmail.com. And you know, Brooke, what we say at the end of every episode.
Godspeed.
Good tips.
We'll talk to you next week for our... 200th episode. Thank you.